I believe, for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And Madam Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to speak very briefly here before you. I want to speak to House File 1595, which members to this bill. As you know, a special session was held in 2012 after the devastating flood that occurred this past June. Upwards of $12 million was appropriated to the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency through the Quick Start Disaster Recovery Program to provide assistance as a last resort when both private insurance and federal assistance are not adequate to return a damaged home to its pre-disaster condition. The Minnesota Housing Finance Agency has done great work and through March 15th of this year, 2013, has loaned nearly $3 million through this Quick Start program. The deadline to apply for these loans has been extended several times, and I recognize that there may be yet loan applications in process that may be accepted yet, but the fact remains that there is still in the neighborhood of $9 million remaining in this fund. There are concerns, members, in our communities that there may be yet more work to do under the direction of the 2012 special session, which has prompted this bill here before you today. This bill, members, would direct those unspent dollars to, in accordance with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, to work with local agencies to develop potential new or modified programs to help repair housing still in need, to work with local agencies to expedite the transfer of abandoned properties to a responsible party so they can be disposed of properly, and request the MHFA to conduct a study of the housing needs of the area defined in the Presidential Declaration of Major Disaster and report back to the legislature by January of next year. Now, in my discussions with MHFA, I recognize that they have some concerns with the language in the bill, and I just want you to know that I'm committed to working with them and all the interested parties in our communities during the first week of April to try and reach a resolution. The goal, however, remains the same, and that collectively, I think we want to provide the assistance where it's needed and try to return our communities to a pre-disaster condition as much as possible with respect to housing. I do know that there's been a fiscal note prepared for this that indicates that over the biennium, the cost of preparing the report and so forth, the language that's in the bill would be in the neighborhood, I think, of about $110,000, which is certainly far more than I would like to spend, which is really the primary purpose of our discussion is with the MHFA in the coming weeks to try to figure out how to do this, how to do it most efficiently, and do so with spending the least amount of money. So with that, I'd stand for questions.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, is this money that's currently appropriated for this biennium going to be carried over the next biennium?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, that is correct. That is my understanding.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. Well, we did that last session with some money for Lutheran Social Services, and it got to be, like you mentioned, fiscal notes, and actually had to zero out the money and come back with a new appropriation. So do you have all those I's dotted and T's crossed to do that?
Representative Simonson.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I honestly do not have all the I's dotted at this point. We are very, I won't say we're very early, but we're still partway through the process. My intention in working with all the parties involved is that we end up with something that works well and does dot those I's, as you mentioned.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was trying to listen and think at the same time, so if I ask you a question you already addressed, you'll have to indulge me. Pardon me?
Multitask.
Yeah. There's money appropriated to do study for this. Is that correct?
Representative Simonson.
Madam Chair, Representative Green, the bill would direct a study to be done the way it's currently written.
Okay. Madam Chair?
Green.
The question I had is that this was a FEMA area. Did FEMA not already do the studies on these?
Representative Simonson.
Madam Chair, Representative Green, it's not. You are correct. FEMA has done some preliminary work in these regions that were declared within the disaster area. What we're asking for in this bill is to go back and do some further work in determining what is still left to be done that we as a state can help out with. And I want to clarify that these dollars that were put into this fund by the, during the special session. These come after, only after private insurance has been used and any federal assistance has been used. Then the state dollars come into play. So to answer your question, yes, they have. However, still more work remains to be done. And to that point, we don't want to launch into some great in-depth study that we spend a lot of money on.
Right.
Green.
Then is FEMA maxed out there then, or are they still working with the people, or?
Representative Simonson?
Madam Chair, Representative Green, that really comes down to a case-by-case basis. It would depend on if the individual had applied for those funds or not. There are still certainly federal dollars available. And again, anytime, and I think MHFA would concur with this, but anytime that there's an application for these dollars through the MHFA, MHFA ensures that private insurance first, federal dollars second, and then these state dollars come into play.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Green, I think, did you have some information on this? No, okay. I think MHFA is kind of jumping out of their seats over there. Do you want to come up and say something? And I think, and we talked a little bit before the meeting, and I know Representative Simonson has been working very closely with you, but let's just get you on the record that you two are working together and that you come back with something a little more complete.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Katie Topinka with Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. I just wanted to clarify the process for individual homeowners, and as Representative Simonson mentioned, we are talking, we have some concerns with the language as written, but we are talking with him about that. But the process for individual, so FEMA did do an assessment following the disaster along with the state Office of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. So there was public assistance available for FEMA. There was not individual assistance for homeowners, but they are there is assistance through the Small Business Administration. So homeowners first go with their private insurance, then apply to SBA, the federal assistance for homeowners, and then if they are not do not get SBA assistance, then they're eligible to apply for the state Quick Start program. So I just wanted to clarify that process.
Representative Green?
So they're not that I assume is the reason there's no fiscal note yet. You don't, I guess from what I'm gathering here, you don't even really know what the need's going to be, if any, by the time they're done with the federal money. Is that correct?
Ms. Pinka?
Madam Chair and Representative Green, there are still a number of applications in process. So we are, the administrators are still working through some of those. Yes. That's correct.
Any further questions? Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. On line 1.18, it talks about transferring abandoned properties. Are these tax forfeited, or what do we mean by these abandoned properties?
Representative Simonson.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, if you continue reading along, it talks on line 1.19, 1.20, the definition of responsible party means either the owner, mortgagor, or county in the case of tax forfeited land. So in certain cases, that may indeed be the case, in which point the county would be the owner.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I thought the way tax forfeited was handled was it went back to the state. Can anybody clarify that? Or I think there is a procedure set in law how tax forfeited property is handled.
We got someone who wants to answer that question? MHFA, are you? Representative Green?
I'm gonna give you, if it's okay, I'll give you a, or do you have an answer? I'll give you a kind of an unofficial answer. If it's county, if it's county forfeit, the county can apply to the state for the okay, I guess, to sell it. Generally, it has to be cleared through the DNR if it is, if it's in a rural area. If it's in town, then the city goes through the same process. It's a longer process, and with some of the stuff that's been going through, it's probably about to get longer if some of the stuff we've been hearing passes. The big thing with it is, too, that I would like to see corrected there is that if it's tax forfeit and needs to be improved, it can be sold and improved by the new owner, and the state wouldn't be on the hook for the money, the new owner would. So, but that's a different story. But that's how I think that it goes.
Okay. Any further questions? Testimony from anyone in the audience? I think what we'll need to do, since we don't have a quorum, is we'll consider this a first informational hearing, and we'll be coming back. I thank you for your testimony, and we'll pick this up with our next meeting. So thank you very much, Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Let's see. Representative Anderson, I'm going to have you come and take over the chair here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm honored.
So this is the one.
Mr. Chairman, because of the situation with the lack of a quorum, we'll have an informational hearing on the two bills I have before you.
Would you care to move your bill, Madam Chair?
Well, I'll move it, although I know I can't officially move it. I would, if I could, I would be moving the open access bill, House File. Let's see which is it. Actually, I don't have it in front of me here. Grab the wrong folder.
And again, Madam Chair, would be unofficially moving it just to an informational hearing.
1539. And I have a couple of witnesses. Lee Ms. Shapiro. There she is. And Mr. Chairman and members, I just want to let you know that as this bill goes forward, we will probably be sending the appropriations over to the Minnesota. Not at the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, but over the Department of Human Services. But anyway, this is a bill that years ago I worked on this legislation, and it was a program we had in place. It's not a new program. There was some circumstances that state shutdown, I believe, that caused us to not have this continued. And we're just going to very briefly tell you why the bill is back before you right now. And we'll start with Ms. Shapiro.
Yeah, all together, right.
Okay. Could you identify yourself, please?
Sure, I will. Yes, my name is Marcy Shapiro. I'm from Open Access Connections. And I actually am going to have somebody who's a participant in the program also speak right after me. I'm going to just try to keep this really short rather than giving you all the information. We're a free temporary voicemail service for people who are very low income or homeless, and we have provided over 60,000 voicemail numbers since we began in 1994, so that's a while ago. And this program basically is to give it to people who either don't have phones, maybe have a prepaid cell phone, but the cell phone, they can't afford very many minutes, so they might be able to have the cell phone for a week during the month. So this is a reliable, consistent phone number that they can have as they particularly look for housing. Also to get into transitional housing where you have to have a phone number. Also to look for jobs, to keep in touch with their health care provider and any support system they have. Over 85% of the people who use this service are unemployed. 75% are homeless, and 25% are what are called near homeless because they're either not in stable housing or their situation, they don't have income that probably, you know, that they're struggling to keep their housing. So basically what this does is it gives them a communication tool to basically get messages. They each get their own phone number. It's not a phone. It's a phone number where they can receive messages. It's like your voicemail at home or anywhere. Basically what we have found is it speeds up people's ability to get housing, to get a job. So in a way, it's a savings for you know, not having to have so much money into shelter, into unemployment, into public assistance. And we provide these services across the state of Minnesota. So, as Representative Clark said, we lost our state funding, which was the foundation of our funding in 2010, and we're trying to keep, we're kind of hanging on by a thread right now. So we really are trying to be able to keep going and provide this service. You know, I just want to say, you know, we all have a million different tools and gadgets that are technology. We have smartphones, we have telephones at home, at work, we have computers. The people we're serving have none of these. They generally don't have a reliable phone, and they don't have a computer. So this is their only form of communication that they have. So think about what it would be like if you didn't have anything else. So I'm going to have Manuel Moore, who has been a user of voicemail, just talk to you for a minute or two. Oh, you can come and sit here.
Well, thank you, Marcy. Okay, hello, my name is Manuel Moore, and I grew up in Karen Clark's neighborhood. I'm a Minnesotan, been here for many, many 50 or so years. So I'm just thankful that Minnesota had some type of program working it, you know, that I could use like this. At the time when I went to Open Access, I just went through a divorce. I didn't have no cell phone. I was unemployed. I didn't have no job. I mean, I didn't have anything. I lost everything, you know. So I just, you know, kind of was in a transitional period. But then when I went to Open Access, I got a telephone number. Okay? So that gave me a lifeline. And, you know, one of the best things I remember, it was a Christmas day. And I'm floating around here at the mission, at the shelters or whatever. But I got a phone call, a message, and my daughter called, and I had no other number, but I had that voicemail number, and just hearing her voice say Merry Christmas, Dad, you know, they had no other way to get into my family. I have a big family, and I had no other way to, no communication whatsoever, you know, I lost everything. But just having some type of communications in your life is vital. Okay, since that time I've gotten housing. I went through transitional housing after that. And then I was able to get work through the church. The pastor could call me and say, Manuel, look, I got work for you to do. Just by having that number, I was able to advance myself in my life. So Open Access, just by getting that number, it opened up a lot of doors for me. And, you know, I was able to even put a telephone number, a number on my resume. You know, you put a resume down there, and it brought me some stability. You know, it seems like, you know, with all the technology today, it seems like it's just a little minor little thing, but it can mean a lot. You know, like when public housing called me and said, Manuel, we got an apartment for you. Please call us right away. You see what I'm saying? It can make a difference. So communications is vital. And right now, my whole life has just turned around. Now, I'm not saying just having that number was the only reason, but it helped me tremendously. And I just think it's, and then now I'm doing outreach I'm doing volunteer outreach, helping other people find housing. So we provide other services besides the number, but, you know, we do housing referrals and we help other people. So I'm trying to give something back. But let people know that no matter what happens in your life, you can still come back through it. You can still fight through it. And, I couldn't believe I was homeless for 2 years. You know, and one of the first things when you're on a budget and you're working with a temporary service, and at least if you got a number, they can call, and they'll call you and say, well, we got some work for you today, call in. I was doing banquet serving, but it was vital that they could call me at any time, but I would check my voicemail every hour, though. You know, I knew where all the free phones were. Listening House, Dorothy Day. But there's a system to it, though. I mean, if you utilize it correctly, you can effectively make some moves. And I'm not gonna lie, I worked it to the max, you know, but it worked for me. And as a result, I have a great life now.
Well, sir, thank you so much for your testimony.
Thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know there's others who are here who are also participants, but since we have such a short time, maybe you can all stand up. These are people who have come today to indicate that they need this service, and we appreciate your coming here, and I thank you. We won't be able to listen to all your testimony, but thank you so much for coming.
And they waited.
Thank you.
And I understand you waited while we were on the floor.
Yes.
Thank you so much. That's just very respectful and very wonderful. Thank you very, very much. Mr. Chairman, I think we don't have enough people here to make the formal move, but this will be temporarily laid over for possible inclusion, and then, as I mentioned earlier, we probably will be passing it on to the Department of Human Services. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, so our next informational hearing will be on... Oh, Representative Anderson, you just stay right there. You're doing a good job. Unless you really don't want it, but I'm happy to have you, you know.
Thank you.
Have that position. So next I'd like to move or have considered for an informational hearing the bill, it's House File...
1476,
yes. And I'd like to ask Ms... Yeah. Sure. Fario Khalid to join me, and then I think we have a couple of other witnesses, and I know we have a short period of time for this room, but
is that
we're
the
doing
bill
everything
number, Madam
abbreviated
Chair, 1476?
Today.
Is it 1476?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, that's right.
We'll hear this bill and lay it over for possible inclusion.
That's
Go ahead, Madam
That'll
Chair.
Be the motion once we have a quorum, if not today, the next time we meet. So I just want to, by way of introduction, say, you know, I have the privilege of representing a lot of different people in my district, and among them are a very vibrant Somali community. And over the years, I've run into a situation where the women, Somali women in that community have needed certain resources that have not been available. And Ms. Cleef, who's with me right here right now, is one of the first people who actually talked with me about how we could try to meet one of the needs, which is a culturally appropriate shelter and services for Somali women who are either domestic violence victims or have been trafficked. And I'm going to just say she's been quite a leader who's really helped me understand a lot of that situation. So I'm going to turn it over to her. And I think you in your package you have a letter of support from Ventura Village Neighborhood, but she's going to basically talk about what the bill is.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee members. I really appreciate for giving me this opportunity to speak here today. I am Farhia Khalif. I am the founder, Voice of East African Women. I've been in this country for many years. Past 15 years, I've been involved mainly the Somali and East African community, especially women issues. I started many Somali films over the years. Also, I started my own talk show back in 2009, and mainly when I see so much is in need, women voices and women to be heard, that pushed me towards the way I created Farhia Show. It's a show that is well-known in the community, Minnesota and worldwide. It airs on many places. I advocate an East African woman and the issues that concerns women's rights and development. Why I did wanted to inform Safe House Sheltering for especially this particular women from East Africa. The need is for many issues that I see every day. Women being abused, culture based. What I want to say is this is hopefully it's not a man's world. You know, what I mean is... as I navigate every day, I have my camera, I take pictures, sometimes I interview women. Many times, there's a lot of shelters in the state of Minnesota. When I looked, the U.S. Department of Health and has identified 275 safe houses. None of them are safe for any East African woman who's from or that side of the world. The community resource it needs many of ways where you go through abusive or you have sex trafficking going on or human trafficking going on. If you end up going any other shelter, yes, you will get help. But sometimes when you have a safe house that who's been managed and been helped and working there, a woman who looks like you or basically, I'm trying to say here. We don't have any safe house, shelter, for where East African women can go to and get resources that even if it's a cultural base, religion, language. So basically what I'm reaching out to you today to support this bill is we need your help to recognize East African women need to have their own voice on the safe house where they can have facility they can look out to and being helped. I know I want to say a lot of things in my mind, but I have some other great people, women here today, who want to give the testimony. If you have any questions, please answer.
Mr. Chairman, I think we'll hear from those folks really quickly, and then
I have Raho Warsame and Kamar Hassan, and they both are well known in the community, very advocate in the community, especially Raho Warsame. I will give them to say some more.
Hello, ma'am. Could you give your name, please?
Yes. Hi. My name is Kamar Hassan. I am from Somalia, as you can see it. I lived in the state for a long time. I graduated in nursing school right here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I'm currently working at Fairview Southdale. And the reason why I'm here, I see the importance of having a cultural settings or religious settings. I help my colleagues every day when a Somali patient or a Kenyan patient gets into our unit, and some of them are language barrier, so I'm kind of interpreting while I'm carrying my own load of work and helping them to navigate simple as making just code status change. Some of them, especially the Somali community, have a hard time understanding what it is full code or do not recitate or partial recitate or anything like that. So I'm nurse working on my own load, like I said, and also helping the other side of the community and about the cultural and religion and language barriers. So the importance of having a house like this is it's the same as any other house working, providing safe environment for these women. But the difference will be cultural, religion, and language. So when this women come to us or come to Farhia, they will see, like Farhia said, people who look like them speak the same language. They will maybe more trust us, or it will be more expressly express their feelings and the problem that they're having. So it will be a good opportunity for the specific growing women in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's my turn. Okay.
You have to speak fairly loud, okay? There you go.
Okay. I'm sorry. My name is Raho Orsemi. I work for a non-profit organization. I manage housing for 14 years. And I see the need and the problem they're facing when the women being have a family conflict or culturally, if they fell from the wagon of culture, what they're facing every day, they come to my office looking for an opportunity for housing. I work with organizations that provide for affordable housing, but sometimes they don't have financially to really pay the minimum rent they supposed to pay if they come and apply with me. So I see the need every day, and they come. If I don't see daily four, I see three. If I don't see daily four of that category, they can afford rent. They're out there. They couldn't go to the cultures. To the shelters because of the culture, and don't want to go. They see. In a different way to go a culture, the shelters, I keep saying culture, that's what going to my mind. And that takes me, and I advocate for them to go to the shelters, because if they don't have where to go and have two children, they're dragging with this kind of weather. Always I do that, but if I know there is a culture appropriate house that they could go as a transition or to support anyway for their condition, that would be very helpful. Every day when I go home, I don't have to think about the woman I turned down today. I don't accept her application because she couldn't pay her rent. So thank you for listening to me. So that's only thing I could say now.
Thank you.
So Chairman, I do have one more witness who wants to get some support.
So I'm Jeff Bauer. I'm a Director of Public Policy at the Family Partnership. I will be extremely brief. I know you're having a long day, and they all are right now. Just thank you for the opportunity to be here. I'm proud to sit always next to Representative Clark, who I think has been behind every effort to provide safe shelter and housing for a whole lot of people over the years. So I'm proud to be here, and these women, too, and what they're trying to do. And always good to be in front of my own representative, Representative Mariani. I just want to say very briefly, you've heard me in this committee a couple weeks ago talk about the Safe Harbor for Sexually Exploited Youth bill. That's something we're working really hard on to build a system around the state for girls who have been sexually exploited. And when I see this bill, it brings my heart lots of joy, because one of the glaring gaps in the system, not just for girls but for women in the state of Minnesota, is anything for the East African community, anything culturally specific. It just really doesn't exist right now. We have young women come through our program at my organization all the time who we try our best to serve and we try our best to reach out to. But if we had a place to connect them to and we had women to connect them to like you, we would be a lot further along. And so I just really encourage you to support this legislation. It's really important. It's a gap we need to fill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Those are my witnesses. And if there's questions, committee members.
Have any questions? Representative Metza.
Just more of a comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clark, I just wanted to thank you for bringing this bill forward. And ladies and gentlemen who testified, thank you for making culturally specific asks. I think I come from an area where, you know, we're a century apart in the timeline, but we were settled up north by Scandinavian immigrants who had housing needs and roomed together, and we're going through much of the same difficulties. And so I just wanted to let you know I'm supportive. Keep up the good work, and definitely keep down here at the Capitol.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
I guess that's it. If there's no further questions, I appreciate very much our witnesses coming and also the committee members squeezing this in. And we will have formal motions on this and the other bills when we come back together next time, which will be April 2nd, I believe. Is that right? Or maybe 3rd?
3rd.
3rd, April 3rd.
I might say thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I really appreciate for opportunity to be here again today, and I really, really want to appreciate today Ms. Clark, really hardworking, very supportive minority immigrant community, not only Somali community, but all East African, Hmong community, Latino, Asian, all. This person is amazing, and all of you, I'm sure. Thank you so much. I just want to put my gratitude to all of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
No further questions. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.